So as many of you know, I'm Jack, just Jack, not attended seminary, I'm not ordained, I'm not even ordained lay minister, so I always feel a bit unqualified to be up here. I was kind of surprised I was asked to be up here again. Tanya's on a much-needed vacationing for a baby shower, and I'm filling in. I want to start off by reading Psalm 137. By the rivers of Babylon we were sat down. Yea, we wept when we remembered Zion. We hanged our harps upon the willows in the midst thereof, for there they had carried us away captive, required of us a song, and that they wasted us, required of us mirth, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. How shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget her cunning. If I do not remember thee, let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth. If I prefer not Jerusalem above my chief joy. Remember, O Lord, the children of Edom in the day of Jerusalem, who said, raise it, even to the foundation thereof. O daughter of Babylon, who art to be destroyed, happy shall be he that rewardeth thee as thou hast served us. Happy shall he be that taketh and dasheth thy little ones against the stones. Anybody feel anything wrong with that? That caught my eye for the choice of lecterns today. You'll be glad to know that the Second Vatican Council canceled out the last three lines of that. You'll be glad to know that the Southern Baptist Conference canceled out the last three lines of that. Both of those organizations never read that in church. And also the Council of Catholic Churches in Canada did the same thing. This came to my attention. I've been keeping up on what's going on with Ukraine and Russia. Not that Ukraine was a saint of any kind. But no, what has happened is abhorrent. And what really caught my eye was that the head of the Russian Orthodox Church made a statement that the Russians going to fight would have their sins forgiven. Wait a minute. I thought that ended with the Crusades. You'll be glad to know that many of his own priests and people in the order, at the risk of life and being in jail, signed a group letter against that. And that large population of the other Orthodox, Roman Catholic, Greek Orthodox, Eastern Orthodox churches have their opinion on how incorrect that is. This especially strikes me. It's a personal battle for me. I have a presentation at church. I have a presentation at work. But I have a personal fight with this. So it strikes home today. And this does tie into this being World Communion Sunday. Everything we do as Christians is as a team. Because frankly, what's out there is bigger than we are. I have a friend of mine, Christopher O'Kahee Crotty. We were best friends in the Navy. He was the best man in my wedding. He's now Friar Crotty. We used to get in the biggest fights at parties, as sailors do, he and I, and we would not hit, not bite, not kick, not choke, but it would be nearly a full-on brawl. And it was always about religion. And our friends would just back up, say, oh, they'll haggle it out, you know, then nobody would get hurt, and we'd get up and hug and shake hands and go back to drinking beer. And we were best friends. And when I happened to come up on Facebook and realize he had joined the Franciscan Order and gotten his bachelor's in liberal arts and his master's in liberal arts, holy cow, it didn't surprise me. And I got his phone number and I called him thinking he was just going to hang up on me immediately. And he was so glad to hear from me. I'm like, Chris, what are you doing these days? And he said, well, I specialize in demonology. And I'm, you know, I'm a Zen, chop wood, carry water. I'm more of an intellectual when it comes to interpreting the Bible. But after living with him for 3 years, there is one thing I do not take chances with. He's told me some harrowing stories, frightening stories. I've worked in locked psych units, folks, all ages, all genders, military, non-military. You know, it doesn't faze me, but man, he's told me some stories. So his job now is on a special Vatican team where he goes out and performs exorcisms. And these aren't just, oh, somebody's being weird. No, they investigate. They send teams of psychologists, psychiatrists to investigate. And then if they decide it's the real thing, he goes out. But he tells me, he's Jack, we never ever fight. We're not going out there to fight. The Bible is not a weapon. We don't go without an anger. We don't go out there in hatred. We're doomed if we do. That's important. Chris and I both went to boot camp a few months apart. He went to boot camp maybe 3 months before I did, but we met in the barracks at the Naval Hospital A School. And I was in a senior company, which is supposed to be the more intelligent, more capable. It just makes it easier for the chiefs. We win the awards. We win everything. We're expected. It's what we're going to do. A lot of pressure. And we did. There wasn't a star or a banner or an award we did not win. And you have to assemble as a company. And man, the first time we cheered, oh, that was a mistake. And we were told, you stand at attention. You don't make a face. You don't say a word. Because you're being trained to be on destroyers and battleships and aircraft carriers and special warfare teams. And when you're going out there, you're going out to a funeral. You're doing what may be necessary, but there is no joy in it. There is no celebration in it. You're going to your enemy's funeral. Conduct yourselves as such. I want to read these three lines that have been cut out in a large number of congregations. Remember, O Lord, the children of Edom in this day of Jerusalem, who said, raise it, even to the foundation thereof. O daughter of Babylon, who art to be destroyed, happy shall he be that rewardeth thee as thou hast served us. Happy shall he be that taketh and dasheth thy little ones' heads against the stones. Wow. I want to read something that's in quite opposition from that. This is special to me. I'll explain in a moment. St. Matthew, chapter 6, verse 37. But let not your communication be yea, yea, nay, nay. For whatsoever is more than these cometh of evil. You have heard that it hath been said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you that ye shall not resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if any man will shew thee at the law and take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also. And whoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain. It's hard to read King James. This was given to me when I was 5. Mom and Dad, when I'd first moved in with them in Commerce, Texas, would always walk down the road to the park. It was probably only 6 blocks, but it seemed like forever to me. And it was a path I'd take to school too. And there was this little old lady that was in this old, old house. And I'd always stop to talk to her. She just had the most magnetic magic about her. And one day, and I remember that day, she handed this to me. And my dad kept it all those years. And a couple of weeks before he was about to pass away, he told me where it was. And man, powerful. This is powerful. This too is powerful. It's the five Gospels. took over 25 years for 254 of the world's top biblical scholars to come up with. A lot of debate. It's the four Gospels, and it's also the text of the Gospel of Thomas. And they voted, tore things apart. It wasn't just Christians, it was all the top biblical scholars, so various faiths, and man, they debated. If it's in red, they all in some strange way agreed that Jesus said it. If it's in pink, he might have said it, but it's close, good chance he did. If it's gray, he didn't say it, but it's according to his beliefs and teachings. If it's black, he didn't say it, and may have even been introduced over the eons by enemies of the Christian church, or have been inserted there by those that were at the Council of Nicaea that were turned enemies of the church, that were actually trying at the last minute to instill their own analogies and wisdom stories in a secret way. This was given to me by an Episcopal priest who had long since been able to stand and preach because of an accident that had rendered her nearly fully paralyzed. And I, for a while, visited her during home health visits. And we got in great conversations while I would take care of her. And she wanted me to have this. What I'm about to read is in red. Don't react violently against the one who is evil. When someone slaps you on the right cheek, turn the other as well. When someone wants to sue you for your shirt, let that person have your coat along with it. Further, when anyone conscripts you to go 1 mile, go an extra mile. Give to the one who begs from you. And then in pink it says, and don't turn away from one who tries to borrow from you. People, you can put in red everything in the four Gospels. It fits on 1/4 of a page. So if it's in red, it's a big deal. Kind of going another quick tangent. Some of you may know of Joseph Campbell. Passed away in 1987. He was one of the authorities on legends and stories and analogy and you name it. The man knew everything about everything from every culture as far back as we had writing of any kind. And the repeating legends and the hero's theme and the hero's myth that would come up again and again and again and again. There's a really cool set of interviews with him, Bill Moyers interviewing him. I highly recommend getting a hold of those and watching those. He once said, to paraphrase, that societies of the future, if we were to continue to exist, would look back on our current society and realize that the Greek modern mythology could be found in our comic books. Found in our comic books. And some of you may have seen some of the more modern movies and realize, holy cow, yeah, what themes and struggles. But in the 70s, when I was in 5th and 4th grade, my parents had no idea what serious stuff we were reading. We would go down to 7-Eleven on the Saturdays, and we'd have to pool our money that would be given as allowance, and each mom would watch our money so we wouldn't spend it all on candy or comic books or pinball. And so we would rotate intelligently and decide who was going to lose all their money that Saturday. And we would fake out our moms. And we would get gum and ices and play pinball. And we would come back with the comic books, which today are called graphic novels. And we would sit together in Brett Elliott's upstairs bedroom, because he had the biggest, fanciest house. And we would sit around and read, just binge read, you know, and then share and spread. And I somehow lucked out to get the episode of all episodes that Saturday. The first time they ever introduced Batman, at least to our age group, just about to kill someone. And if you know comic books, it's these squares and rectangles. You don't really know what's coming up until you put your eyes on it. And in one scene, you got to realize, folks, Batman, about 6'2", 210 pounds. He's about the ideal UFC fighting weight and height. Born rich, mom and dad killed in front of him, and he decides when he turns of age, because he's laughed at by the boss that had the bad guy kill his parents, he's going to do whatever it takes. So he travels the world fighting. fighting. Travels the world, fighting, until he finally ends up in this Chinese gulag prison because it's the toughest place he can find. And then he gets recruited out of there by this top secret, eons old ninja organization that believes in killing off societies that have become evil. A lot like Lot and Sodom and Gomorrah and Edom. And they're effective. And they're responsible for like the last 5,000 years when Rome is sacked and things like that happen. And he trains with them. And he becomes wicked. So wicked, bad at it, that he decides they're evil. And he burns the place down. Thinks he kills everybody and escapes. Comes back to society as a billionaire. He's Batman. He is not nice, folks. He fakes to be this stupid, self-centered playboy during the day. He hardly ever sleeps. He keeps himself awake with chemicals and supplements. He's always covered in bruises, and he's always just one movement away from snapping someone's neck. So in this frame that I happened to come across that year, probably in 1975, Batman, big hulking back, is holding somebody off a 40-story building. And you can tell he's decided he's just going to drop them. Oh, wow. In the next picture, no words, but suddenly there's this arm touching him behind him on the left shoulder. Now, first of all, you can't sneak up on Batman, and you're certainly not going to touch him. He's going to snap your arm in three or four places and beat you with it. And whoever has touched him, that touch has calmed down Batman. The next frame, a little bit more light, and you're like, oh my God, is that really who I think it is? Now, you got to remember, Batman's name is Bruce Wayne. Nobody knows that except his butler. His best friend knows that. And his best friend, you can barely see the brunette hair, perfectly combed, a red cape, and part of a blue armored sleeve. Superman's about 6'3", 235 pounds. His real name is not Clark Kent or Superman, it's Kal-El. And Kal-El has just appeared out of nowhere, put his arm on the back of Batman's shoulder, and the next line says, Bruce, we're not like that. Wow. Superman just flew from who knows where, faster than the speed of light, hearing about what's about to happen, hand on the back of the shoulder, Bruce, buddy, we're not like that. Don't drop this guy off the 40-story building. That stuck with me all my life. And I was quick to show, oh, look, look, look. You know, we're like, oh, my God. Bunch of fifth grade boys going, dude, Superman knows Bruce Wayne. Bruce Wayne knows Superman. We didn't know that, you know. That's the phrase, Bruce, we're not like that. Here's where it gets personal. I moved in that Nantucket when I was 5. My brain, as I found out throughout the decades when I do counseling over and again and update new problems, it used to just be anxiety. They didn't know that 5-year-olds could have PTSD. They just thought World War II vets, World War I vets, and Vietnam vets had PTSD. Went in some counseling about another 2 years ago and decided they had a whole new pattern. It's not just PTSD. That's where somebody's experienced one episode. I have what's called complex PTSD. Great, thanks. My horror occurred when I was too young to do anything about it, and it occurred over and over and over and over and over. I never knew. While I was in the Navy, and I would sit in a room at the back, all the SEALs would sit around me, or Force Recon, and they thought I was one of them. I'm not even a combatant. I was just a regular Navy corpsman. Turns out, my brain is permanently hardwired like theirs. At that early age, the hippocampus gets robbed, and it's constantly on the search, no matter what, for physical threat and the potential of being shamed, to the point that it can hamper, under stress, my ability to learn anything new or remember. But my entire brain, at the click of a switch, becomes one amygdala and just becomes this honing device. I can identify with Batman. My favorite, of course, was Edgar Rice Burroughs's long before the comic books began. It was Tarzan, baby. At 5, at 6, when I moved with my mom and dad, I felt like Tarzan. From 3 until 6, I was a wild boy in the backwoods of Alabama. Fed myself, fought for myself. Weekly, daily, brutal attacks. My stepdad, and man, it was awful. I won't even get into it. And then I come into this house where it's like, wow, I'm in nobility. And I'm combing my hair, and I'm being clean. I have to wear suits to church, and I have to have manners. And there's this true story. We had a junior high behind the parsonage that Mom and Dad lived in that was right next to the First Christian Church in Commerce. The parsonage isn't there anymore. It's a parking lot. The church is. There was a junior high behind us. It's now a fire station. I came in one day. I can remember this. I mean, chewing gum. And Mom was mom, but at that time I called her Aunt Sandra. She's like, Jackie, where did you get the gum? And without a body, oh, it's all over the ground out there, Aunt Sandra. Gum on the ground, that's awesome. So I was wild. And the first time I saw Tarzan evolve in the movies where he was underfed and scarred and had lice and ticks and growled, none of this awesome yell stuff, I thought, dude, that's me. You know, and then he goes and puts on the suit and he has the haircut and the whole English manner thing. And yeah, he's got it. He's highly intelligent. Man, there's a part of him that just feels more comfortable, mostly naked, running with apes. And yeah, the symbolism, and we get it with Batman. That's old society. Superman. The more you read Superman, the more you watch the movies, it's very obvious what the analogy is. There's even one scene in the movie where he flies up into space and floats like this. And he's not from Earth. I haven't had a chance to look up what Kal-El means, but it's probably something close to the Christ. His analogy in all those stories, he's got the Jesus fight going on. So he shows up out of nowhere, left hand, which is symbolic, because that's where Archangel Michael's supposed to be. When prophets and mystics talk about experiencing Archangel Michael, it's always on the left. Bruce, we're not like that. The weekend I quit drinking, all I could afford was rent a one-bedroom in somebody's nice house so that when my daughter was with me, she had a not embarrassing place to be. And I had a bunk bed. It's all I could fit in that little room. And she slept on the top bunk. I slept on the bottom. And every other weekend, I didn't have her. And those were the weekends I was really scared. And I had made an arrangement with some people I'd met to go out and practice shooting for my truck on their property at Targets. And they were scary people. Their hobby was to drive around at night or during the day and kill bad people that they knew the cops wouldn't even take a second chance looking for. They were scum. These were vigilantes. And they looked normal. They were really good at it. And I'd only had 2 beers the night before because I'd had my daughter on Thursday. I worked Friday, and I swore I only had 2 beers. But my truck was parked on the other side of the driveway, and I did not remember driving. So I had to go out. Is it dented? Is there blood on the front? And then the call came in. My ex-wife needed me to pick up my daughter for the weekend. Okay. So, okay, I'm sober. I'm not really drunk. I can't remember what happened. And my knuckles are bloody. Did I just hit a tree or a wall or a fence out of anger? Or did I beat up somebody so badly that when I go to pick up my daughter from school today, they're going to recognize my truck and they're going to shoot the truck? And as I'm pondering this, sitting on my bottom bed, on the bunk bed, looking in through the big picture window out of this bedroom, swear to God, it wasn't outside there anymore. It was 2 weeks from now. It was like a movie, but in full 3D. And then it was a month and 6 months and a year and 5 years and 10 years. After 2 weeks, my daughter disappeared from that picture. This is weird. You know, I don't do drugs, folks. I never have. And everything calmed back down. It was normal again. And there was a voice, not my poet voice, not the 10,000 demons in my head that are always telling me how screwed up I am from the complex PTSD. It was this calm, strong, male voice, universe, I guess, speaking to me in some way that I might get my attention if it wasn't me just being psychotic. And it didn't demand, it implored like a dad crying. It said, Jack, please stop drinking. Bruce, we're not like that. So I quit. Got in rehab. This really stuck out with me. Christianity has always really stuck with me. You know, what's going on in Ukraine and all around the room, all around the world, folks? Wow. Sometimes there just need to be really tough marshals that just kill people because those people are just evil. But, you know, I had a great-great uncle, Texas John Slaughter. I don't think he was ever glad about what he did. My grandmother used to tell me stories about some of the other gunslingers, my granddad too. That was only a small generation away. These men were calm. These men were mature. These men were not quick to go kill someone. They were never happy about it. They never posed by the dead bodies in a pine box. And they always kind of looked at it as if they had failed if it had to come to that point, but they knew it was necessary. To be Christian, which we're celebrating as a world today, is to hear that, to feel that, that when faced with evil, we respond differently. There's that voice, there's that presence that says, Bruce, we're not like that. Thank you.